This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Glad to have you in on the Garden Hotline on this gorgeous March Saturday. I'm Scott Jagow along with Michelle Reeser-West. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
This is not your first time.
I think I've been here maybe once before.
Yeah, a couple times. Yeah. But we're glad to have you back to answer your questions. That's why we're here. It's an at-your-service program. It's easy. You just pick up the phone, your cell phone, whatever phone you have, 314-436-7900. Again, it's the Garden Hotline. It's 314-436-7900 to get in and ask your question of Michelle. There have to be a lot of questions because it's spring.
It's officially spring, and it feels good, doesn't it?
It does. We might get some thunderstorms tonight, but that's to be expected in spring.
That's right.
So hopefully nothing like we had about a week ago. That was pretty brutal.
It was pretty brutal for sure.
So how did your company deal with that? Did you have to do cleanup in people's yards? You're with Pointer Landscaping.
Yeah, so our maintenance department definitely received a few calls for some cleanup after the fact. We didn't really have anything too major. Even at our own office, we're down in Baldwin/Wildwood area. So we had a few trees that came down. The road was blocked on the way to the office. But for the most part, we just had a few trees and limbs and some cleanup to do. So it wasn't terrible. And we sent some crews out, had to rearrange the schedule a little bit as far as cleaning up goes. But we got most of our folks taken care of without a lot of things to do. So we were pretty lucky, I think.
What else are you doing right now? Is this like time to just go with people's yards?
Yeah. We are just trying to keep up. We're just trying to get as much done as possible. We're, you know, this warm weather has got our phones ringing off the hook with people wanting work done this spring. And, you know, we're just trying to manage all those new calls coming in while managing all of our existing customers and keep, you know, the plant orders have to happen now. We have to do our spring cleanup. Next week, we're starting to do some spring containers outside, and there's just a ton going on right now.
Spring containers. Talk about those.
So we're just going to – so our annual program that we do for our clients, we do 4 seasonal changes. And the first one of the season is obviously the spring containers. And we've been waiting and waiting and waiting to watch these overnight temperatures because we're trying to get the overnight temperature to not be freezing. And we will pick some cold tolerant annuals like pansies. We do some, you know, lettuces and kales and all kinds of things like that that are cold tolerant, so that if we do get a frost or, you know, a freeze, that the plants will make it through it. And it's just a nice way to bring a pop of color to your containers when there's, you know, while we're waiting for all the other plants to start waking up.
What do these containers look like?
I mean, there's all different shapes and sizes. Okay. People just have small little containers that they put, you know, their summer annuals in, but it's, or big containers. You can even do pansies in your garden beds if you wanted to put them straight into the ground. But
I mean, they're like pots?
Yeah, pots.
Okay. Just a different word.
Yeah.
It was like
container, pot. I'm sorry to confuse you, but yeah, just like your flower pots.
Okay.
Filling those with things that'll tolerate those colder temperatures.
And so what does fill them to prevent the cold temperatures from having too much of an effect?
So we'll just put in things that don't mind it if it frosts.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, you know, pansies, if we do get a light frost or even a freeze, they'll bounce back. You know, we'll use a lot of things like lettuces or kales, alyssum, snapdragons, things like that. We also use a lot of perennials in our containers right now, like coral bells. We'll use some carex, which are little grasses that can tolerate the frost. It's just, you know, a way to liven up your front porch. We can even put things like bulbs, daffodils, and tulips, things like that, in containers. And a lot of people do that anyway. They'll put those bulbs in the container in the fall, and they're pushing up right now in their containers for a nice little spring display.
Well, let's start with the phone calls. The number to call is 314-436-7900. Jim, good morning. You're up first on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I got a couple questions. I don't know if your guest has ever used some of these electric cordless pruners. They got the jaws like a bypass pruner. It's handheld. She's got any recommendations on those? And is it too late to spray fruit trees with some, I don't know what I would use to protect it, like it's a coral burst crab apple, a Sargentina crab apple, I think it's called Firebird crab apple. What would I use on that? I appreciate the service. Thank you.
So let's start with your first question, which are the pruners. I know that there's a lot of those out there. And I also always say, when you're buying any kind of gardening tool, that you kind of get what you pay for. So if you go in on the low end of things, those tend to be, you know, useful for a short period of time, but they don't hold up for a long period of time. One of the best places that I like to buy tools like that is from a company called A.M. Leonard. They do a catalog, but they also have a great online website. But they are professional grade tools that are reasonably priced for homeowners. And if you buy their brand, the A.M. Leonard brand, a lot of those will have a lifetime warranty. I'm not sure what types of that kind of pruner they have on their website, but I mean, it is a really beneficial tool. I think what you're talking about is basically a mechanical type hand pruner that helps or assists in, you know, some of the pressure that you need to cut through things. So it's a more, you know, electric or mechanical type pruning tool that we are trying to use a few of those things here and there professionally, just because, you know, our people are out there pruning sometimes all day, every day. And just, you know, with their bodies, it just, you can wear your bodies down. You know, carpal tunnel's a real thing for our for our gardeners, and those types of tools that assist you with, you know, some of the heavier pruning are really beneficial. So I think that there are a lot out there. And like I said, just do your research. I don't have a specific model or brand that we're using, but I know that A.M. Leonard has some really nice options on that website. And then to go towards your other question about spraying, I think it's going to really depend on if your plants are leafing out. You can still spray them versus spraying them for a preventative measure for fungus or pest and disease. Doing like a dormant oil or a neem oil would still probably, I think you probably have a little bit of time left. Again, we like to spray those before the trees start leafing out. certainly before they bloom. But if you miss that window, it is a possibility that you can spray them just after the flowering. Once they drop all their flowers, you could hit it with that neem oil or horticulture oil after the fact. The dormant oil specifically is we typically use when things are dormant. So if we reach that dormancy and they break bud, then I would try to use some other type of oil like a neem oil or horticulture oil as opposed to the dormant oil.
All right. That was a pretty good answer there.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, thanks for calling in this morning at 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. This is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Glad to have in Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping today to answer your questions at 314-436-7900. Let's get back to the phones. Joel, you're up next. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. I have a question about houseplants. So I'm hoping Michelle's extensive knowledge of outdoor plants translates into the house. The problem I'm having is leaves, the green leaves are dying and withering away, turning brown from the tip back towards the stem. And it's a hard line. It's not like a gradual withering away. The tip of it is definitely brown and dead. And then there is a line, and then the rest of the leaf seems to be pretty healthy. And the puzzling thing about this is that I'm having the same problem with three plants. Two of the plants are in our house, but in separate rooms. And the third plant is at work in a separate building altogether. And they're all having the same problem. So I'm thinking of something I'm doing.
Yeah, it's probably your fault. I wish that I had a really great answer for you, but we could try to troubleshoot this a little bit. I don't have a huge knowledge of houseplants. Let's talk through it a little bit. What kind of, are they all the same type of plant? Are they different types of plants?
They are three different. One is a peace lily, one is an angel wing begonia, and the other one is, I guess the common name is a money tree.
Okay. And have you had them all for a while, or are these newer plants, or?
They are all established, I guess, within the last 3 or 4 years. I think we've had them, maybe 5 at the most, but probably 3 or 4 years. So not brand new, but not really old either.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me that you have a problem in multiple locations with different plants. So, you know, a lot of times our house, there's really two very common things that I start with, really, I guess we could say three, with houseplants or potted plants. One is going to be your soil. So if somehow the soil got contaminated or it has bacteria or fungus, that could definitely affect your plants. One of the other things is watering, but because you've had these plants for you know, a long period of time, I'm sure you have, or I'm going to assume you have, a pretty regular watering routine, so that is probably pretty consistent. And if your watering was not consistent or you weren't doing it right, you would have had a problem sooner. So unless you've drastically changed your watering habits, then I wouldn't suspect it's that necessarily. And then the other thing is pests and disease issues, or really pests, because we kind of talked about fungal or bacterial stuff that would be in the soil or showing up from overwatering. So the other thing could be a pest problem that you're having. So I'm not sure that the description that you gave me necessarily correlates with any kind of pest that I'm familiar with that typically afflict our house plants. So for me, it sounds something soil related or water related. So it might be that you need to just clean up all of those leaves, all of the declined leaves, get those completely out of there. If you have a chance to swap out some of that potting soil and put some fresh soil in there, and then you could do, you know, neem oil is a great product because it is a fungicide and an insecticide, so it works for both things. So after you remove all of those declined plant, anything that looks bad or unhealthy, get that out of there. then you can spray the plant with that neem oil, and hopefully that will get rid of, if it is a fungus. And then if it's in the soil, if it's a fungus in the soil, there are some drenches. And I believe you could use neem oil as a drench. You'd have to read the packaging and get the concentrated form and use that as a drench, which is basically just watering it into the soil so all of that fungicide penetrates your soil. But I think that's what I would probably start with, is cleaning it up, neem oil, and potentially swapping out some of that soil.
Okay. All right. So there is a possibility that this is not my fault.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. But we'll start with you. Happy gardening. Good luck with you.
Thank you, Michelle. I really appreciate your show and your advice. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling in, Joel. The number is 314-436-7900. Doug, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Thanks for calling in, Joel.
Doug, good morning.
Oh, yes. Yes. I'm calling in regards to what you can treat your plants with as a killer or a weed deterrent or something that won't hurt a dog. Was there any product out there along that line?
I have a couple answers for you. So a lot of people don't like Roundup and have bad things to say about it. They say, the powers that be in Roundup say that after you spray the product and it has dried, that it is no longer harmful for your pets or humans. So you can take that however you want. It's a controversial topic. The other things that we use that are more natural to kill weeds, like some people use a vinegar and make a vinegar spray and maybe put some Dawn dish soap in there. There's a lot of different recipes for homemade weed spray. But even that, if you use, you know, a lot of vinegar, that could maybe irritate your dog, but it's still less harmful than maybe that Roundup is. But again, there's tons of recipes for homemade weed killer. The thing with those, if you're using those, you have to do multiple applications. They're not quite as strong as some of the other weed killers, but that's an option for you too. And there's all kinds of organic weed killers out there that are on the market. There's some that's made out of, you know, like citrus and some other things. So, you know, you could try some of the organic products that are out there.
Yeah, they make a horticultural vinegar, which is 30% acid. I've used that before and diluted that.
Yes.
So that would work still. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Doug. We appreciate your call. You can call in at 314-436-7900 with your question for Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping about whatever topic is on your mind. Obviously, we are in the beginning of spring, so there's a lot of activity. Landscaping companies are doing their work. Michelle, another topic this time of year is the Bradford pear.
Yes, thank you so much for bringing that up. I actually told him to bring that up. So the Bradford pear, or just any calorie pear, in there's, I believe, like 26 cultivars of the pear tree that have become invasive. If you are anywhere outside in the St. Louis area right now, you can probably turn your head. I can see one out the window here and find a blooming pear tree. And it's a really great time to identify those and then get out your chainsaw and cut them down.
Yeah.
So they're really a horribly invasive species here in Missouri. And right now, the Missouri Invasive Plant Council is doing a Bradford pear, or pear, I got to stop saying Bradford pear because there's all different kinds, but a pear buyback, which means you can go on their website. It is moinvasives.org. And register, and then you have to email or upload a photo of your Bradford pear that you've cut down. And then on April 22nd, you can pick up a new non-invasive native Missouri species that you have chosen when you register. And it's a great way to try to to kill all those pear trees that are everywhere. And again, it's a perfect time right now to identify them, because you're driving down 270 and 44, or I was on 141 at Clayton the other day, and they are just everywhere you look. They're little ones and big ones, and they're just incredibly invasive, and we got to get rid of those. And right now is a great time to do it.
Mow Invasives?
Yeah, it's mowinvasives.org, or you can, it's also, they partner with Forest Relief, which is here in St. Louis. It's also partnered with the Department of Conservation. So even if you just stick into Google pear buyback or Missouri pear buyback, you'll come to that website. But it's mowinvasives.org. And it's a great way to get rid of that Bradford pear, which again is invasive. They're also just not great trees in general. They have soft wood. They have occluded bark, which means their limbs will break off very easily in storms or high winds. They also have a lot of pest and disease issues. So not a great tree, even if they were invasive. And people say their flowers are really smelly. So I think it's kind of like a cilantro thing. You either smell it or you don't. But I never really notice it. But they say the flowers are pretty smelly. But right now is the time to get your chainsaws out.
Get the chainsaws
and identify those pear trees.
Okay. We might revisit this topic later in the show. But good advice, and we appreciate it. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is our guest. She's answering your questions, and we'll take more of them after a brief break. It is 314-436-7900. That's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Rick. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. Let me get you. Phone. Got a question about pre-emergence. I don't know if you talked about it before. I don't know whether to go with a liquid or a granular on that. I would like to know the advantages and disadvantages with a pre-emergent.
So I really don't know that there is a huge amount of advantage and or disadvantage in my opinion. Are you going to be putting this in your turf areas, or are you talking about in your beds?
Turf areas. I got about almost an acre.
So really it's going to be personal preference. For me, I think about when we're putting down, or when I have crews putting down pre-emergent, liquid, there's so much. I mean, if we're mixing it, I don't know if you're getting, stuff that is pre-mixed, or if you're going to be mixing it yourself. The granular to me is a lot simpler, especially when I'm having crews put it down, because I don't have to have them do all that mixing and measuring and all of that stuff. And it goes down pretty evenly. You put it in your spreader or whatever mechanism, or however you're putting it down, and it goes down pretty uniformly. Sometimes when you're spraying, it's depending on, again, if you're just using a hand spreader, if you're using bigger equipment to spray, that makes it a little bit easier when you're putting down a liquid pre-emergent. But when you're doing it by hand, it's easier with the liquid to miss places, or it's inconsistent because maybe you hold that sprayer in one place a little longer and maybe not so much in the other area. So with the liquid pre-emergent, it feels like it's a little less consistent in application. But again, that's going to be dependent on who's putting it down. As somebody that's careful and is really, really paying attention, then that might not be an issue. But for me as a professional and having, guys of varying skill or desire to be out there putting spray down, some of them don't do it quite as well with the liquid. I do love liquid pre-emergent in rock areas. If people have like a rock mulch or dry creeks or areas where there's drainage, I love that liquid pre-emergent because it gets really down into those rocks and crevices very well. But as far as in beds and on turf, I personally prefer the granular stuff.
What's the percentage on the granular then? The 0.08. What are the numbers that I'm looking for when I'm looking for a pre-emergent granular?
I honestly don't know. You just have to look at the packages. I don't remember seeing a lot of the fertilizers will have those numbers on it, but the pre-emergent doesn't necessarily have those types of numbers on it. But you will want to look for whatever square footage you're putting down and whatever spreader you're using. You'll need to figure out if there's, you know, if you can adjust the openings. You'll need to make sure that you have all of that calibrated correctly so you're putting down the right application rate.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks for the call, Rick. We appreciate it. 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Kurt. Good morning, Kurt.
Good morning. I was wondering a question about power raking. I've heard that you can power rake as late as May. I know you don't want to do it when it's really wet or, you know, moist on the ground. So what's your opinion on that, Michelle?
So I love these turf questions. This is not my super strong area of expertise, but I do think that that you can do that a little bit later. I think if Glenn Kramer was here, I think he talked about it last week on the show that that he recommended doing it a little later. So I think you would be fine, you know, waiting to go into May. But I think later is better than right now.
Sounds good. Thanks, Michelle.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Kurt. We appreciate the phone call. It is 314-436-7900. Michelle from Pointer Landscaping is answering your questions on the Garden Hotline. We will get to more of them after a short break. Stay with us on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Garden hotline number is 314-436-7900. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is answering your questions on this beautiful Saturday morning in the beginning of spring. And up next, we have Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. I've got a question about some strawberry plants I purchased 2 days ago from a greenhouse. I want to put them in the ground, but they haven't had a chance to harden off. And the issue is, if we get a lot of rain, then the soil is going to not be good for planting. And then I don't want to wait too long so that I don't have a harvest this year. So I read that the overnight temperatures, when they're consistently above freezing, that, you know, you could put your plants out. So, but I guess the biggest issue is, you know, the plants not having had a chance to harden off after being in that ideal climate of the greenhouse.
I think, you know, that's probably, you know, a legitimate concern. Are they potted? They're already in a little pot. They're not like the bare roots.
Oh, they're not bare roots. Yep. No.
So here's the thing. If those were my strawberry plants, I'd be out there planting them. I think for me, there's some more delicate types of plants that definitely need to be hardened off. I think strawberries, if you wanted to risk it, would probably be okay. The other option that you have is to, you know, leave them outside during the day, bring them back in and do that for a couple of days. And then hopefully if it rains tomorrow, that's fine. But maybe you could plant them on Monday or Tuesday. The other thing you could do is plant them today. And if you had like some kind of a blanket or a shade fabric or something like that, that you could throw over tonight to help them get through. While you were talking, I just looked at the weather. Tonight's overnight low is 40. And I believe that we're consistently in the 40s, even in the 50s later this week. So that's well above freezing. And again, strawberry plants are pretty hardy. Like mine started to green up over a month ago out in the garden. And we've had a lot of freezes and a lot of, you know, weather fluctuations. And they're still looking really good and healthy. So there are certainly plants that I would tell you not to risk and to, you know, let them have a little bit of, you know, in and out and hardening off time. But I honestly think that your strawberries will be fine.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for the call, Bill. The number again is 314-436-7900. Your questions for Michelle. Michelle, I want to go back to the pear thing for a minute. I mean, the trees are pretty to look at.
Sure.
But if you don't know about their awfulness, but what is their awfulness? Like, what exactly do they do so that people, when they're asking themselves, well, why do I have to cut down this pretty tree?
Just trust me. They're sold for their beautiful spring blooms, right? They're gorgeous out right now. It's one of the, you know, there's not a ton blooming right now. Some of the trees are, other trees are starting to bloom. We had magnolias last week, the star magnolias. Now we have our saucer magnolias are going and the cherries are starting to go. And we'll have our service berries and all these other things, the dogwoods, the red buds are flowering right now. But they were sold originally for, you know, that beautiful flower in the spring. And that's why so many people love them and continue to want them in their yards. I mean, it's, you know, it's something beautiful to look at. So they were sold originally as a sterile cultivar, which means that they wouldn't have been invasive. But one of the things that is happening is that they have little pears, little berries or fruits that form, and the birds and other wildlife eat them. And they disperse those seeds all over the place. And they're becoming invasive. They're taking over everywhere. It happens a lot, like I said, in the intersections of highways like 270 mm-hmm. and 44, because those are disturbed areas. They're not mowed or maintained regularly. But they're also in our woods woodlands and things like that. So they're incredibly invasive, which is the major problem, is that they're taking over and hurting our native populations. But in terms of other negative things about this tree, I mentioned it a bit earlier, is that they are... they're soft wood. They break very easily. They lose limbs all the time in storms. And they're just not overall healthy trees. They get fire blight and some other diseases that that aren't good for the tree itself. And then it can spread to other trees. So there's just a number of things to dislike about the Bradford pear. But the invasiveness of it is really the most concerning thing, is how much we're seeing it take over everywhere. And you can just look around as you're driving right now, driving down the road, look at the white flowering, and then right next to it, you're going to see the super green leafing out shrub below it, and that's going to be your honeysuckle. So while you're looking at the white flowering invasive pear tree, look at the honeysuckle that's also starting to leaf out right now, and get your chainsaw after that too. We're just going to take care of all the invasives.
But you don't have to do it yourself.
You don't.
You can go to mowinvasives.org.
Well, Mow Invasives will get you registered for the new tree. I think they also have a list of some tree companies. Maybe the tree that you have is bigger and you need some help removing it. So you can call up an arborist or a tree company to help you, especially if it's near a house or other structure or fence. Sometimes, you need some help in that regard so you don't damage anything. But if it's a smaller tree, it's certainly something you could take care of yourself. But call up a tree company and have them give you a quote to get rid of it. And if it's a good tree company, they'd be happy to help you get rid of that Bradford pear, so, or any of the other pears.
All right, let's get back to the phones. John, you're up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, we all know how valuable honeybees are, and it's getting this time of the year where they want to expand their hives and swarm. So if you happen to see a swarm out, call the Eastern Missouri Beekeepers Association. We've got a whole bunch of people that will go out and gather them out of your yard and put them in a hive and bring them to a different location and get them out of your yard. So it'll be very good for the bee community. So don't do anything to them except call the Eastern Missouri Beekeepers Association and let them come and get them out of your yard.
Thanks for the call. Will you talk to us a little bit more about what does it look like when we're when you might see a swarm of bees, or what are we looking for? What are you talking about?
You'll see a big gob of bees hanging on a tree. It could be hanging on a bush. Any place that you might see around St. Louis, I show every year there was someone on a stop sign or just a big. What's happening is the old queen leaves the hive, and whoever wants to go with her goes, and whoever wants to stay. And she's already made arrangements for a new queen to be born. So that as she leaves, that is considered a swarm of bees. So they fly out and try to find a new location. They could be your yard or wherever. But if you can call the association, they'll come and get them and put them in a hive. And that's what the bees are looking for, they're looking for a home.
That's awesome. Will you tell us the name of what we're looking for and how to find you?
The Eastern Missouri Beekeepers Association. They're in St. Louis. They've got a whole bunch of members, and there's a lot of members around the St. Louis area, and they'll call somebody to come get the swarm.
Well,
if you call
really...
that number, they'll send somebody out there to pick them up for you.
Super great information. Thanks for sharing that.
Well, hey, thank you for your program. I enjoy it.
Thanks, John. We appreciate you. 314-436-7900 is the number to call to get your question on the air for Michelle Reeser West from Pointer Landscaping. Anything trendy this year you're noticing with your company, what people want?
Super trendy right now. We've actually been talking a lot about it in our design department, but we've had a lot of people calling in for edibles, right? The more people are out in their garden, they want to have things to eat. It's a different kind of edible. Some of you people might have went in a negative direction.
Edibles,
meaning fruit trees or perennial vegetables or herbs or things like that. So, you know, people are really, really into that, and we're seeing more and more places that are selling fruit trees here locally or different types of raspberries, or I just put in some rhubarb and some other things
now
at my
talking.
House. I know I had to put that's like a like some kind of a hot word on this show. Hopefully it doesn't unleash the rhubarb beast. But
that's me.
I did just plant some of that, but it's just becoming a bigger thing, especially as the prices of groceries are escalating. Not that vegetable gardening is that much cheaper. I spend so much money on plants and things like that. But getting perennial vegetables and fruits makes it a lot cheaper in the long run, because these are types of plants that will come back every year for you. And you don't necessarily have to plant a new plant every year, like a tomato. You have to buy a new plant every year, or peppers or things like that in our zone. You'll have to keep buying those. But part of what, you know, is becoming a little bit trendier now is getting things in your landscape that that will provide food for your family.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The other trend that I'm seeing in my neighborhood, for example, see, that's quiet.
Yeah.
People producing their own eggs.
Yeah.
Is not a quiet thing.
I'm interested
in the chickens.
I keep saying, you can have roosters in your neighborhood?
Apparently.
I think most of the time roosters are not allowed, you know, and we've been building a lot of people have been requesting some chicken coops. So we're actually getting ready to start a chicken coop build. I can't remember what town it was in, but we did have a hard time getting a permit for it. We were the first company to request a permit for a chicken coop.
All right, I might talk more about this.
Yeah.
All right. Stay tuned. Get your phone call in at 314-436-7900. The Garden Hotline is at your service. The point of it is to answer your questions, your burning springtime gardening questions. And Michelle Reeser-West is here from Pointer Landscaping to answer them. The phone number to call is 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm from Perry County, Missouri. And I had tornado damage to some old pine trees, and it twisted the tops out. Will those have to come down?
So, yeah, I mean, it's going to really depend on how extensive the damage is. If the whole top was torn off, I would suspect that they are going to need to come down. A lot of, you know, a lot of trees like that have a central leader that's, and if it's been torn off, it just won't ever kind of grow the same again. And I also suspect that, you know, by saying torn off, I'm, you know, sure that tornado didn't leave a nice, pretty cut. So that tree at minimum would need to have, you know, that the torn off area cleaned up. But I would, I think my advice would be to get a certified arborist out there to give you, you know, a definitive answer. Without seeing the tree, it's hard for me to say, but getting somebody, not just a tree guy out there, somebody that actually knows about tree healthcare, and that would be a certified arborist to come out and take a look at that and give you recommendations, especially if it's around a structure. You know, there's always potential for, you know, that tree to become unhealthy and unstable. And pines have softwood anyway, so definitely would recommend getting an arborist out there to take a look.
One other question, are the pine, these are probably still 25 feet tall, are they? Pine logs have any value?
I think they do, but most of the time when we use wood for lumber or things like that, it's a large amount. You can get somebody to buy a large amount, but if it's just a single tree or something like that, your value isn't going to, you can't necessarily have somebody come and purchase that from you. You could maybe put it on like Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace and tell people that you have it to come and get rid of it. But it's in terms of just a single tree selling it for lumber or whatever, it's probably not a big moneymaker for you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for calling in at 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Debbie. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning. I have a blue spruce that's probably over 30 years old. I mean, we've lived in the house for 30 years. And it's like losing its needles. It does have, you know, minimal new growth each year, but it's so thin you can see right through it. Is there, you know, what's the recommendation? Is there something we can do to help get it stronger, or at, you know, 30 plus years, has it reached the end of its happy life?
So blue spruce in St. Louis are not always happy. It is technically called a Colorado blue spruce, not a Missouri blue spruce. So it is happier, you know, in a more northern climate that has colder winters and cooler summers is really the biggest thing for a lot of these northern evergreens. They don't like our summer temperatures. So the blue spruce and all their different forms, shapes, and sizes here in Missouri can have a couple of different issues. And without seeing what's going on, it's hard for me to tell. But it's I can definitively tell you it's probably one of two things, or both at the same time is also common. Is one is could have spider mites or a mite infestation that is causing it to drop all of those needles. You can treat that with some kind of a miticide specifically. Most insecticides don't necessarily kill spider mites. So looking at the label to make sure that mites are included in whatever product you purchase. And then multiple applications. Spider mites are super hard to kill. And then maybe even spraying something that would make that could kill the eggs. They have a life cycle. They lay the eggs under on the underside of needles. And again, it's really hard to kill those. So it needs multiple applications of a miticide. And then the other issue that it might have is a needle cast, which is a fungal issue. And that also causes the needles to be kind of discolored. You can see almost like a purple hue to the needles, and then they'll turn the orange or brown and fall off. And there's really nothing you can do about that once the fungus is present. And this is mostly true for a lot of fungus, is that funguses can't necessarily be treated. You can do preventative fungicides. You can slow down. By doing the fungal treatments, you can slow down the spread of that fungus, but ultimately the tree will keep dropping those needles and eventually die. I mean, it may last several more years, but it's going to constantly be dropping those needles, and you'll have to keep spraying that fungicide. Is it a shrub form or a big tree or what?
It's a big tree. It's probably, you know, 35, 40 feet. I mean, it's a big tree.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was already here when we bought the house. We've been here 30 years, so.
Yeah, so I had the same thing. I had a big blue spruce in my front yard. When I bought the house, somebody had just started limbing it up, so I could walk underneath it when I purchased the house because they kept limbing up all of those diseased and dying branches. And you can keep doing that, and that's part of the way that you can help to prolong its life if you are into that sort of thing. But it also helps to, you know, clean up all of those needles that may have that fungus that's on the ground that can spread. You know, fungus can spread if those needles are still on the tree and we get rain. Fungus spreads by splashing water and that rain falling through the tree. So it's just going to keep being a problem. There are arborists out there that will do treatments for the needle cast, and I believe they spray two or three times during the season. I think it's early on. But if it is a tree that is valuable to you and you want to try to, you know, prolong its life, I was going to say save it, but I don't think that's going to be my answer, because ultimately blue spruce just aren't happy here in St. Louis. So if it's something that is of value to you and you want to prolong the life, I would recommend calling a tree company and seeing if they can treat that for you for either spider mites or that needle cast. I went the other way and chopped it down, and I no longer have a blue spruce in my yard. So, and that's also something to weigh. Are you going to pay somebody over the years to keep coming out to spray it? Or pay up front about the same price to have somebody come cut it down, because over time that's going to become expensive, and it will probably be the same price to keep it sprayed over the years as it would be to just, you know, cut it down.
I was just thinking, as tall as it is, I mean, I wouldn't even know how I'd be able to spray all the way to the top.
Yeah, they would have to they have the tree companies thing. Have equipment that gets the spray up there. It would definitely be something you need to hire somebody to do.
Right. Okay. I do have another question. Bush honeysuckle. My mom's land is infestated. So can you, you know, you said cut it down. Is that all you need to do? Just a chainsaw and cut it down? And the smaller ones, you know, I try to rip out of the ground because they've got like that underground root, which it's horrible. But, you know, we're trying to clean up the area. And so if we just cut them down and then, you know, lawnmower, is that sufficient or?
It is not sufficient. If you're just cutting them back, then you would need to use some kind of an herbicide and spray those fresh cuts. So when you cut them back, then come back through with an herbicide to kill it, because you can cut those honeysuckle all the way back to the ground and they're just going to regrow. So if you can remove them, that is the best way to do it. And otherwise, it's really one of the only ways to do it is to use an herbicide. There is a product called Tordon that you can probably get at some places. It's a little
How do you spell that?
T-O-R-D-O-N. And that's really good for painting on the stems of woodies. That really will help kill it. But yeah, that's my answer for you.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, you know, my husband, you know, we're trying to, it's like in the yard. And so we cut, they're like right under trees. And so we're like trying to get rid of it and trim up the trees so we can just mow under it. And he's saying, well, if we cut it every time, it shouldn't grow, right?
It'll keep growing.
It'll keep growing. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks, Debbie. 314-436-7900 is the Garden Hotline. We'll take more of your questions after a short break for Michelle Reeser-West. Tuned into the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping answering your questions this morning as we get into spring. 314-436-7900 is the number. Tom, you're up next. Good morning.
Hello. I have a question about Bermuda grass. I have a garden where the Bermuda grass has invaded it, where there's liriope and Stelladoro daylilies, and I've just been trying to pull it, but it's just become very invasive. So I've cut out a 5 by 10 foot area, but I find that there's still roots from the crabgrass that grown between two slabs of concrete that I can't pull out. And I was trying to figure out how I can kill those roots with while this garden is dug up, if I should use Roundup or if there's something else that I should use.
So, yeah, this is a constant problem also in my yard as well. It's just a nightmare to constantly be having to keep that Bermuda grass from creeping in pretty much everywhere. So Roundup is an option if you're spraying and you don't have a lot of other plants around. It will definitely kill that Bermuda grass. If it does come in contact, obviously, with other plants, that's a problem. There is an herbicide that only kills grass type plants and will not kill your broadleaf plants. I don't remember the exact active ingredient in that, but I was at Elmel in St. Charles the other day and was looking at, it's just a product from a company called High Yield, and it just says grass killer on the front of it, but it only kills the grass and it does not affect any of your broadleaf perennials or things like that. So I would look for a product that specifically targets grass only, and that way you don't have to worry about any other plants around if that's the case. We use this a lot for our maintenance clients. A lot of times we'll get turf grass that creeps into ground cover or things like that. And it's nearly impossible to weed out, you know, the germinated, overseeded grass that's in our ground cover. So it's easier for us to just come through with that product and spray, and it only kills the grass and not the plants around it. So most herbicides will kill the grass. It just depends on what's around it that you need to protect.
Yeah, and that's my secondary question. This is all growing in the middle of liriope, or I call it monkey grass, mm-hmm. and in the middle of Stelladoro daylilies, right. And it seems like they're more of a grass product that would also be affected by this.
Liriope is not affected by it because it's not actually a grass. So we spray it in liriope all the time. And again, if you spray the roots, it's not going to be as effective. You need to let it kind of flush out a little bit, and so you can spray the foliage, because it's not going to be taken up by the roots. It's going to be
Well, hopefully there'll be just little volunteers that it's been so invasive that I've just had to take out all the plants.
Yeah, it's just going to be, like I said, a constant thing. The bane of my existence right now. And I have that to do this afternoon, is to remove some Bermuda grass that I neglected last year.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep.
Thank you, Tom, for the call at 314-436-7900. We have another Tom. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I planted three rhododendrons, and I would guess that they're probably 14 inches tall and about the same around in diameter. And I noticed that they have the flower bulbs. They look like what I would call flower bulbs, but it hasn't bloomed. It didn't bloom last year, which I kind of anticipated with just planting them. I dug the holes deep, and about three times the size of the root container, and I enriched the soil with like a Miracle Grow potting soil. But I'm noticing a lot of, and I kept them watered real well all throughout the hot summer last year, and until I put the hose away for freeze. But I'm noticing a lot of brown leaves on them, and wondering if there's something going on with them that you could help me with.
Yeah, so rhododendrons, especially when they're newer, but really all of them can be affected by winter damage. Most of that's, if you just planted it last spring, it's not as rooted in as, a more mature plant. So it may have a little bit more winter damage than an established plant. But it is common for rhododendrons, azaleas, to have a little bit of winter damage in our area. But it sounds like that you have the flower buds on, and rhododendrons haven't started blooming here yet. So hopefully those will still flush out and you'll have a decent show, or at least a few blooms, because like you said, it is common when a plant is newer that it doesn't have as many buds, so it won't have quite as big of a show as it might have, two or three seasons from now. So the other thing that you can do, just leave that winter damage alone for now. If it's a full leaf is brown, you could maybe pluck that off. But most of the time, I just leave winter damage alone until everything's flushed out, and then you could go back through and clean it up if needed. But for now, I would leave most of the winter damage alone on the azaleas. Let it send all of its energy to hopefully pushing out a few blooms for you. And then the other thing that you can do, rhodies and azaleas in our area do like a little bit of fertilization. So you still have time to put some of that down. A product that we like to recommend, it's easy to get. It's at most of our nurseries and big box hardware stores, is called Hollytone. And it's a really good product. It's organic, and you can follow the instructions on that. I forget what it is. It's like a half a cup or a cup per per foot of growth. So if you just have one that's about a foot, you might need only a half a cup or a cup, depending on, read the label. And there's a spring application rate and a fall application rate for that. But typically you just spread that around the drip line, around the root ball, and kind of work that into your soil and mulch and water it in. And it's an excellent fertilizer for roadies. And that might help it, push out some new growth and get past that winter damage a little bit.
Okay, sounds good. Also, on the same topic, on the rhododendrons, they are facing south, so they get sunlight all day long.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to be a real issue other than keeping them damp, right?
Yeah, and, south facing is fine. I mean, they can take that full sun. They do prefer a little bit of afternoon protection, but again, keeping them watered regularly. Within a well-drained soil, they prefer well-drained soil. So that south-facing shouldn't be a horrible problem.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks for the call, Tom, at 314-436-7900. We'll continue in just a moment with your phone calls on the Garden Hotline with Michelle. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Our guest today, Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, taking your calls at 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Hi there. How are you today?
Good.
I have a question about Roundup. Is the new Roundup today as good as the Roundup of last year that had the glyphosate in it?
So I believe all of the Roundup still has the glyphosate in it. They may have updated the formula, but as far as I know, here in Missouri, we still have glyphosate in our Roundup. That's still our active ingredient.
Okay. Well, I was in Lowell's yesterday, and looking at their labels, and none of theirs had the glyphosate on there. I was just wondering.
As far as I know, they may have a different Roundup for different uses, but as far as I am aware, the regular old Roundup is still glyphosate.
Okay. Thank you then.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Thanks, Steve. Up next, we have Michelle for Michelle. Good morning.
Hey, Michelle.
Hi.
Hey, I got a question. My tropical hibiscus survived my first winter in a pot, but I did get some gnats in it. When can I take that outside? What is safe?
So typically, we like to wait for all of our indoor plants that we want to take outside. We want to wait until the overnight temperature is above 50 degrees. That does not mean that you can't take it out during the day. Like today, it's going to be 60 degrees. If you took it outside to get some fresh air and some sunlight, then I would just recommend bringing it back inside. So you could do the in and out thing for a while. We do have some higher temperatures coming up, overnight temperatures. I think in the 10-day forecast that we do have some 50s, but I don't think it will consistently stay above 50 for probably a few more weeks. So we're a little bit early to just leave, especially our tropicals out. If there's something a little bit less tropical, maybe like a, some kind of a tree. I have a fiddle leaf fig that can, maybe go outside in a protected area or something like that. But I would definitely wait a few weeks until you're leaving them outside.
Okay. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Up next, we have Lori. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning. I hope everything is going well with you. I'm getting over a little bit of a head cold, but I'm doing fine. In regard to the crabgrass that is in between the sidewalks, I learned a long time ago of an old-time resolution or solution to that, because vinegar or either table salt is an acidity. You can pour that on there. If you're using the table salt, you got to wet the ground between the cracks and then pour the table salt on there. And they will eat it root and all. That's what I do, but that's because I have dogs, and it's safe for them if they walk in it, then they don't get something toxic on their paws. I just thought I would add that around my garage and where the pets are, I use the Roundup, you know. But if it's within the yard and if anybody has pets, that's just one solution. That's the only thing I wanted to add.
Well, thank you
for your time.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Yeah, and I know that vinegar, people use vinegar a lot. Sometimes the vinegar that you just buy at the grocery store isn't quite strong enough, but there is, you know, there are some horticultural vinegars out there that have, you know, a higher percentage. I can't remember the numbers. I think what you buy at the grocery store is like less than 10. And then the horticulture vinegars that are out there are, you know, 20 or 30%. So those work a little bit better. I've not heard of putting salt in the cracks of your driveway. It's one of the things I love about gardening, though, is everybody's got all of these little tricks and things that they've used over the years. So, that's a new one for me. But again, and we talk about salts a lot too, so the only thing I would suggest on that is making sure that salt is not going to run off into a garden bed or something like that can affect the soil. But yeah, lots of home remedies that people can use.
Okay, let's continue with the phone calls. Joe, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hello, happy spring to all.
Happy spring.
Yeah, I was wondering, do you think that steam would work well for, you know, weeds and stuff like that? Or do you think it would just wither them back and then they come back?
What did you say? I missed the word. Do you think what would work well?
Just to use steam, hotter than boiling water steam.
Oh, yeah. I've never done that. It's also another thing. I know that, you know, an extremely hot temperature definitely will kill things. If you have a way of doing that, that's a simple way of doing that, I think that would totally work. I am interested, how would you go about that? How are you planning on just pouring boiling water?
Well, the one guy said like they have pressure washers for the house. He said they have like a steam thing.
Gotcha.
That uses, high pressure and shoots steam out.
Yeah. And again, I think that would definitely kill that part of the grass or whatever. I don't know that is going to, if there's protected roots further down the line, if that's like a 18 inches or something, and there's some roots that are still underground down the line, it will kill what it touches, but it may not kill the root system.
Yeah, I was just wondering before I invested in you, Brent, something out like that.
It's a great way to clean out the cracks in your driveway, though. I mean, it may not be helping it from growing back from the roots, but it's definitely an effective way to aesthetically get rid of things.
Okay, I just wondered if you ever heard anything like that. Okay, thanks, Michelle.
Sure, thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Joe. Up next, we have Linda. Linda, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I have a 2-year-old sunset maple that is doing quite well, but last spring when the cicadas were getting so thick and so bad, I bought a net to put over the top of the tree and fastened it under the branches, and it worked very well. But when I took the net off in the summer, there's about 3 little ends of branches that are bent, and my assumption was they would straighten out over the winter or into the spring here, but they're still bent, and I don't know, should I cut them off or hopefully they'll straighten out over the summer?
They probably are not going to straighten out over the summer. They are likely broken either from the cicada damage. There may, what we saw a little bit last year on the tips of especially the younger trees, the cicada damage caused a little bit of breakage at some of the tips. If you can easily reach those to cut those off, that would be great. If you had, a pole pruner, or if you can reach it by hand or to climb a ladder, it's fine to get up there and cut them off. Most likely over time, those will likely fall off if you can't reach them. I don't necessarily think that calling an arborist out to prune them off is your answer, because if it's a young tree and it's a small branch at the tip, that would likely take care of itself. But certainly making a clean cut up there from the wherever that damage or wherever that bend is a good idea. But I doubt that that will perk back up. It's either broken or now growing that way, and it likely won't correct itself.
Okay, well, I can do that.
All right, good luck.
Those darn cicadas.
I know, it was wild.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Seems like a long time ago, the cicadas.
I know.
It's almost a year.
Yeah, but the cicadas, I was just taking pictures of the cicada damage. It looks crazy on the underside of the branches, but it almost looks like a wound that was on a human that might have been stitched up or something. But it's an interesting look. But they are all healing really well where we had all that cicada damage. So hopefully we won't see a lot of issues with that this year.
Last chance to get your question for Michelle Reeser-West. Coming up in the next few minutes, 314-436-7900, the Garden Hotline on KMOX. See how many calls we can get through in the next few minutes before the show is up with Michelle. Margie, you're up first. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I heard the gentleman earlier talking about salt as a weed control, and I have a really great recipe. I can share it if you'd like, but I mean, I have a flagstone path in the back with, like, in between the crevices, they're lined with the small smooth stone. The weeds are terrible. They come up, and I came across this recipe. It might be a Martha Stewart recipe. I'm not 100% sure, but if you like, I can share it. It's three ingredients. It's so simple, and if I do it in the spring, it lasts almost all through summer.
Yeah, let's hear what Martha Stewart has to say.
Well, it's 1 gallon of vinegar, just regular vinegar is what I used, 1 tablespoon dish soap, you know, Dawn, and 1 cup of salt. And I just drizzle it through those cracks, and it really works. I kind of worried about what the salt residue might be doing underneath those flagstones, if I have to be concerned about that. But I've used this for 3 years now, and it really works.
I mean, that sounds like a very common recipe that I hear. I wouldn't be worried about salt under the flagstone. I'm only be worried about, you know, any salt residue in the beds. But thank you for calling with that recipe. Super helpful.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling in. Up next, we have Catherine. Good morning, Catherine.
Oh, good morning. I have 2 questions, if I may. First, a question is, I have these hyacinthias in a pot. And so when they die back, how do I store them, like, for next year if I want to redo that? The bulbs.
Yeah, the bulbs, just let them die back, let them yellow. And then you can cut all that foliage off. You can either put them straight into the ground to store them. That would probably be what I would do. Or you could try to store them in like a dark, like, brown paper bag with some peat moss or something like that in it. But you likely will have, I think, the most success if you put them, you know, somewhere outside in the yard, or, you know, just keeping them dry. And if you keep them inside, just check them every now and then to make sure they're dry and not rotted out.
Okay. So when I put them in the, ground after they, Okay. So another question, I saw this, what zone are we? Are we a 5 to 9 zone?
So it depends on where you are. They changed it a little bit for us and said we are 7 in some areas of St. Louis, but I would generally say we're 6A.
So, I mean, a 5 to 9 would not be a good zone for me then?
No, you can use a 5 to 9 because we're within that zone.
Oh,
so,
within that zone. Okay.
Yeah. So anytime you're...
Okay, this is a plant I just came across. I'm trying to do a perennial bed. I have went down to everything, so I'm starting over. So it's called a little redhead, and I've never seen it or heard it. It's the gibbon, or the other name for it is Spigelia.
Spigelia?
Yeah, Marilandia. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, so Spigelia is a native of ours. It's a for the shade. So I'm sure that's just a cultivar of that native plant. So It's a great plant I love to use in my garden. I've never heard of that cultivar, but I bet it's a good one. So I think that should work fine for you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Yep.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too, Catherine. Thanks for calling in. Dave, you're up next. Good morning. Hello.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. We purchased a yew, a small yew. It's about a foot and a half tall, about a year and a half ago. And it's getting consistently lighter green, where the other yews are just nice, lush green. And this one seems to be getting, browner and browner. I look in the middle of it, and it's green, but the outer leaves are just kind of fading. I wonder if you have an idea what that might be. I noticed earlier in the program, we talked about a fungus. Could that be my problem?
It could be. Are they all planted in a similar location, or
they're
close together?
They're kind of like in a line. The others have been there a long time. And this one, like I said, is about a year and a half old. Mm-hmm. And it's just getting lighter and lighter on the green.
So I suspect it's a watering problem, to be honest. If it's newly planted and the other ones are established, just keeping some consistent moisture. Also, check that you did a nice, when you backfilled that new planting, sometimes the soil can be loose. I don't recommend stomping around the root ball, but a gentle pressure with your foot to make sure that's in really well into the ground, and then just consistent watering. But I suspect it's a watering issue.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you. Next, we have Mel. Good morning, Mel.
Good morning. Thank you. I have about 10 three-year-old boxwood, and I'd like to know how often do I fertilize them and when do I prune them, spring or fall?
So fertilization for me is always a question of if it is needed. So I always recommend getting a soil test, and that will just establish if you even need to do fertilization. If you are fertilizing boxwoods, you can do it in the spring right now, or you can do it towards the fall. I would do a very light amount in the fall because you don't want to push out new growth. So for boxwoods, definitely spring fertilization is best. And then in terms of pruning, I always say tax day to Labor Day on boxwoods. So April 15th is the earliest I would prune, but most of the time we want to let them flush out a little bit. And then you can prune them again around Labor Day in September.
Okay, fine. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. That is going to be the final call for today.
Yeah, so thank you, everybody, again for having me. But remember those pairs out there and go to mowinvasives.org to get more information about the pear buyback.
Michelle, glad to have you on once again. I think you're on next week, too, aren't you?
I think I am.
Maybe with Aaron?
I think it's a dual hosting with my friend Aaron.
We'll look forward to that. Thanks for tuning in to the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.